Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today we're talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford. She is a managing partner for Portsmouth, New Hampshire-based attorney firm Jackson & Lewis. She is going to be speaking about, we all know them, we all deal with them, the quote, jerk at work. And you're an employment attorney, correct?
I am, Dave.
Well,
yes,
welcome.
I am.
Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, you know, this is a great topic because, gosh knows, I'm sure anyone listening today will say to themselves, I know one of them, and it's called the quote, the jerk at work. So, first of all, before we start about this, what gave you the idea of doing a discussion or seminar on this type of topic?
Well, that's a good question. I started doing this seminar about 10 years ago, and it was really based on a book I read, and hopefully I can say the name on air, which is The No Asshole Rule by a professor from Stanford called Robert Sutton. He started writing an article that was called More Trouble Than It's Worth, and that turned into a book which really has the premise that the jerks at work or the bullies at work are not worth it.
Well, you know, bullying today has become a very hot topic. You hear it on the news. You hear it, you know, everywhere. It's, I hate to say that it's almost the buzzword right now of the day, bullying. So how does the two connect in terms of being able to say that, you know, it's not always bullying. There's other parts to this as well. But tell me how the two connect.
Well, there's really an issue of the jerk at work and the bully at work, and that has been an increased problem in workplaces across the country really for a decade now. But now there is heightened awareness. And the issue becomes that the jerk at work, there really are no laws that prohibit that kind of conduct. It's obviously an HR nightmare, but there are no specific laws. And what is going on, both on the federal level and in states across the country, is that legislation is being enacted to try to stop that type of behavior in the workplace.
So to be clear, currently today in all 50 states, there are no current laws that protect you against somebody just being a jerk.
That's right. 25 states have tried to pass legislation. So far, nothing has passed. There's been some federal legislation, but so far, nothing has passed. So it becomes an HR nightmare of how to deal with this problem.
Well, it's certainly helpful for all the jerks out there that, you know, can continue to do what they're doing, but we want to prevent that. So let's talk about first what you call the jerk test. How do you know if someone's just being a jerk or if somebody is just having a bad day?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's really a persistent action by someone who was a bully, and that is isolating someone, picking on someone, what they call mob behavior, which is one person starting picking on somebody in the workplace and other people join in, swearing, profane language, that type of behavior. But basically, behavior that goes beyond the normal, I'm having a bad day. Goes on and on, a pattern, and you see it with several people in the workplace that can make a workplace just a nightmare to be in.
You know, with today's social media, a lot of times people are looking at and saying, well, maybe it's not directly to me in my face. It could be behind my back. It could be on Facebook. It could be on Twitter. It could be another way. Is that still considered the same quote-unquote jerk at work?
It is, and I think we're seeing heightened actions on Facebook, for example, is a perfect way for bullies to pick on someone. What happens is that someone will make a comment and friends who aren't really friends will join in and pick on someone in the workplace. Now, there are some laws that protect employees from being able to talk about the terms and conditions of employment, and specifically the National Labor Relations Act basically says that employees have the right to deal with the terms and conditions of employment, which can include saying bad things about a supervisor, for example. So that becomes a dicey issue of when an employer can discipline or discharge an employee for engaging in that type of bad behavior.
Well, I think, and we're going to talk about it today, we're looking at policies, procedures, and processes to try to help HR professionals in limiting that liability and limiting their quote-unquote jerks at work in the workplace. But there are certain things that we realize cost employers at work. There's a cost to this. And you lay out some interesting facts in terms of how that can do damage to an employer. So go ahead, provide some of those.
Sure. You could, if you did a cost analysis of the amount of time that it takes to deal with a jerk, I think that you would find it to be astonishing. The time that not only HR, but the time employees spend complaining, the time that you spend in meetings and on emails correcting bad behavior is really remarkable. I mean, in this book that Sutton has published, he goes through a cost analysis for one particular employee for a year-long basis, and it costs something around $160,000 a year for the time spent, the downtime spent dealing with bad behavior at work. So oftentimes, it's a cost analysis issue because some people who are the jerks at work are really very talented. They're very bright people, very creative people, and employers will often keep them around because of the benefit that they give. So I think in a lot of ways, you need to do a cost-benefit analysis to figure out when the jerk at work is costing more than he or she is worth.
What also could be a supervisor. It could be the owner. It could be a president of an organization. It could be, heck, could be the head of HR. You know, these are things that do happen out there in the real workforce. And so how do you, when it's your supervisor, you know, how do we look at this and say that still is a cost to the business?
Yeah, well, it can be a supervisor. It can be a boss. And there are some studies, actually, that show that when the boss is the jerk at work, that will let employees feel entitled to also be jerks at work. So having someone at the top be the jerk at work is as bad, if not worse, than having someone on a lower level, because it sets a tone that's really unacceptable in the workplace.
When you're looking at employers that you deal with and you're talking to them about these types of situations, tell me what you're seeing as some of the consequences to actual management and to actual HR professionals of not dealing with this problem.
I think when you don't deal with this problem, it's really twofold. One is a recruitment issue, and that is that it's very difficult to hire people. Word gets out. These communities are small for most of us, and most of us know who the good employers are and who the bad employers are. And so you won't want to go to a place that has a reputation for allowing people to be the jerks at work, to engage in that bad behavior. That's an issue. Retention is an issue as well. I mean, who wants to stay at a place where you have a jerk at work and that person is really running the workplace? Now, you know, we all know in this day and age, it's still an employer's market. That will change. You know, you and I have been around the block long enough to know that these things go in cycles. And right now, it may be a good time for the employer, so employees may not want to leave. But that will change as everything does. And when that does, the first thing you're going to do is get that resume out and try to find a place of work that's a good place to be.
Yeah, there's no question it affects retention. It affects hiring. It affects morale. It affects everything at the workplace. But what are some of the legal effects that can happen with this? You talked about the fact that you know, there are no quote-unquote laws saying that somebody can't be a jerk at work. But what are some of the legal ramifications if you don't do anything and then it really blows out of proportion?
Yes, even though there is not a specific law right now, lawsuits are brought all the time. And whether they have a good or a bad basis, they're extremely costly to defend, even if the suit is frivolous. But for jerks at work, what we're seeing are still other causes of actions, intentional infliction of emotional distress, sometimes assault, sometimes battery, defamation cases, invasion of privacy cases. We're seeing other causes of actions that creative plaintiffs' lawyers are trying to bring on behalf of their clients who've been victimized by a jerk-at-work situation. So even though no specific state or federal law, it still is an issue and can mean a lawsuit for an employer.
Well, there also could be health insurance costs. There could be compensation costs that come out there. What have you seen in the past?
Yeah, that's a good point. There are workers' comp claims that can be brought. That's a significant issue. What we're also seeing is mental health leaves of absence. If we're employees are basically saying, hey, you know, I am really traumatized by the abuse in the workplace, and they're taking leaves of absence, whether it's under the FMLA or a workers' comp issue or an ADA issue, whatever it is, it's a significant cost to the employer.
When you're talking about that person finally leaving, what are some of the, what you call the damage in the wake that you're seeing once they leave?
Once the jerk at work leaves,
yeah.
I think what happens is that, you know, you still see some lack, some poor morale in the workplace, lack of trust for the boss or the owner.
Credibility, right?
Credibility issues.
Shot. Yeah.
Sure, absolutely. It becomes a significant issue. You know, you lose faith in your employer, and that's a big problem.
Well, trust is a lot to earn, and you can lose it pretty quick.
You can. You can. In a heartbeat, particularly when you allow bad behavior to persist, when you're doing it for the bottom line, which is generally the reason that you're going to do it.
No, and that is another fact, that all these consequences do affect the bottom line, whether it be lawsuits or whether it be workers' comp or whether it be, you know, just time spent in having to rehire or training or dealing with the situation or time spent. That is a cost to the bottom line.
Yeah, it really is. It's a significant cost that I think employers don't really think about. Sometimes I think you get a little blindsided and myopic when you decide that you're going to keep the jerk at work employed. Because, again, they're usually the star performer. So from the boss's perspective, you've got the star salesman, and maybe he or she is a jerk, but they're bringing in 50% more than everyone else on the sales force. So you can see the tendency to say, okay, I'm going to allow this person to remain employed. But that long-term effect is not thought about as much as it should be by the employer.
We're talking with Deborah Fort. She is the managing partner and employment attorney for Jackson Lewis LLP in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are talking with Deborah Fort. Let me tell you about a new national sponsor for the HR Power Hour. It's the law firm of Jackson Lewis. Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national workplace law firm with, yes, a local presence. They have 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico. But what you really need to know, HR professionals and in-house counsels and C-suite professionals, is that Jackson Lewis provides a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. Local contact information for you. You need to know this. You need to write this down. Deborah Weiss Ford. She's in the Portsmouth, New Hampshire area. She's licensed to practice in Maine and New Hampshire. She can be reached at 603-559-2700. Or for more information on the Jackson Lewis Law Firm, you can either go to the HR Power Hour website and click on the Jackson Lewis link. Or, of course, you can go to jacksonlewis.com. And we're talking with Deborah Weiss Ford. And we are talking to her about the jerk at work. That's right. We all know them. We all love them. Well, maybe love is a strong word, Deb. Kind of a love-hate thing, you know, love-hate relationship. All right, so, you know, we've talked a little bit in the first section here about the jerk at work. But sometimes there's the hidden jerk at work, the one that you would say, you know, it's a challenge to deal with, the definition below the radar. Kind of, you know, that person that maybe stays out of trouble a lot, but still is a thorn in your side. So tell us how you might diagnose that hidden jerk at work.
So these are the smart jerks the covert jerks, the jerks who stay under the radar, the jerks who are particularly smooth, I think, with people who are above them in the food chain, but awful to deal with if you are below them in the food chain. And they're a particular problem because those above, the supervisors, the managers, the owners, don't recognize the hidden jerk for what the hidden jerk is, which is a huge jerk and a problem for so many people.
Sometimes it's done in humor, isn't it? It's done in a way that, you know, it's just a joke.
It often is. Sarcasm, it's a humor. I didn't mean it. It wasn't my intent. That hidden jerk is often the person who, when you interview them, if you're doing an investigation, when the problem comes out, is the first one to say, hey, we were really good friends, and I thought that everything was fine, and it was just a joke, and he or she initiated it. I didn't mean anything by it. But, of course, the effect of it is just as bad as if it were covert.
So tell us how we should diagnose this. Tell us how we should handle it.
Well, for that person, I think that one thing you have to do is document, document, document. And that is that for the performance evaluations, not only should we be looking at the work performance, but also the attitude and the behavior and the effect that person is having on everyone on the team. When you don't document, when you don't do proper performance evaluations, the jerks get away with it, and particularly the hidden jerk. So I think you need to have the documentation, and you need to have some kind of a mechanism, a policy, an open door communication, so that employees feel that able and trust enough to be able to come to HR or to the applicable manager and say, hey, I'm having an issue with this person.
Let me jump in just for a second, because I think it's important as the listeners are thinking to themselves, how is this different from someone that's a harasser? Because harassment is covered under most policies, most procedures. How is this a little different from harassment, meaning being a jerk?
Yeah, that's a good question, because when we're talking about harassment, for the most part, we're talking about harassing someone based on a protected category. So you harass someone based on gender, based on sexual orientation, based on race, based on religion, based on disability, based on age. There's a protected category that federal and most state laws will cover. But for the bully and for the harasser, for the workplace bully, there is no specific law. So there's no protected category. There's no category that says you can't be a bully. So that's the problem, and that's why some states and federal legislation are looking at making changes to this particular type of jerk in the workplace.
Okay. So we've established the person's a jerk. We've established that we need to do documentation, typically by a supervisor or someone who's taking information on these situations. So how do we handle that?
So you have to handle that, I think, in performance reviews. There are various ways to handle the jerk at work. One is through performance reviews of the individual jerk. I think they need to be looked at more carefully to document behavioral issues. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it, and what some companies are doing now, is to have employees evaluate the manager, the supervisor, sometimes a couple times a year.
360 reviews.
360 reviews. That's exactly right. And that way, the jerk at work is able to be given feedback saying that you are a behavioral issue, there is an attitude issue, or some kind of review process that basically gives that jerk of work feedback that is not just one person who finds you difficult, but maybe a whole team.
We're talking a little bit about the hidden jerk at work. So how should we prevent or preempt the behavior by recognizing it, of course, but how are some of the things that we could do to try to maybe deal with this issue ourselves if we maybe don't feel comfortable or we're starting to feel comfortable more bringing it to the boss or to someone? How do we try to diffuse it?
Yeah, so it's often very difficult for a coworker to confront the jerk at work. Many people have difficulty saying to someone, hey, you're bothering me or you're making my life impossible. To the extent that you're able to do that, usually direct communications are the best way to do it. For some people, that's verbal. For some people, if you have to, in writing, and that can be by a letter, by email, by some kind of a memo that basically says, this is the specific issue and this is how I felt because of what you did. In those instances, we recommend specific examples because oftentimes a jerk at work is unaware, or maybe doesn't care, that behavior is unacceptable. So the more specific information, the more documentation, the more examples, all of that is helpful to help diffuse the issue.
Well, you talk about diffusing. A lot of this is about power, isn't it? You know, power in the workplace, being over someone and controlling someone. They like to, as you call it in your materials, light the fuse and watch the situation explode. So, how do you deal with that part of it?
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, it's often light the fuse, as you say, and then walk away and then watch it explode. So, sure, that is a real issue. I had my own example of that many years ago when I was an associate at a law firm in New Hampshire. There was a gentleman who was known as the jerk at work, although back then we called it something else, and he was difficult, and he used to have associates get his briefcase from the car. One day he walked into my office and he threw his keys on my desk and asked me to go down and get his dry cleaning because he had some event that night and needed a clean white shirt. And I think I will never forget having this guy walk in my office, drop his keys and say, go down to the parking lot and go into my car and get my dry cleaning. And that's a jerk at work. I'm not really sure why. Now I know that I never would do something like that, but all those years ago, it's tough to just not do something that the jerk is telling you to do, particularly when they have power over you. And yes, Dave, I completely agree. It's always a power issue. Always.
When somebody's dealing with a real-life issue and they feel, well, they feel like, you know, I'm kind of at a loss here. I've got to have a job, right? I've got to work. Need to make money. I have a family to support. Certainly in times like today, it's tough. Sometimes people are hesitant to actually deal with these situations. What do you think are some things that you could say, Nate, you really should because why?
You really should because you are unhappy. You are not going to remain employed at a place, even if financially you need the job, that is so detrimental to you psychologically. And you really should because you should stop the behavior. If the jerk is being a jerk to you, chances are he or she is being a jerk to other employees in the workplace too. And if you are unable to directly confront the jerk, there should be mechanisms that allow you to go to HR, if that's the appropriate body to go to, or to your supervisor or to a manager to register a complaint about the jerk.
So when we're talking about opposing consequences, and you know, we've now got to the point where somebody is maybe complained to HR or they've complained to a supervisor, and maybe first the boss is looking at it and going, well, it's kind of not harassment. It's kind of like, I don't exactly know where to go with this. This is kind of uncomfortable, right? It's uncomfortable as a supervisor. Would you please just do your work? It would make life a lot easier if we didn't have all this drama going on, right? Typical response by any manager out there. Oh, please, come on, just deal with it. What are some of the things that you say would be something that they could do to get past that point?
For the manager to do?
Yes, for the manager.
Well, I think education means everything, and training is really so critical. I mean, these days, almost every employer is doing anti-harassment training or diversity training or respect in the workplace training, and call it what you will. The whole point is to raise the level of awareness so that managers, supervisors, owners, employees understand that you cannot put up with bad behavior in the workplace. Period. And the jerk at work is the same type of issue. So you can tack that on to your anti-harassment, to your respect in the workplace training, but there should be education and training with specific examples to talk about the jerk at work, to talk about the bully, and to talk about the effect, both financial and otherwise, on the workplace.
Well, I think when you're talking about training, certainly people in organizations today, CFOs especially, look at it and they go, oh, God, another thing we have to pay for, another training we have to do that stops production. But in real life, training can really prevent costly mistakes.
Absolutely.
And costly liabilities, which, again, if you're talking to C-suite professionals, they'll go, oh, no, that's almost more important initially to be able to do that.
That's right. I mean, I think there are short-term and there are long-term goals that you're going to look at anytime you're dealing with employment issues in the workplace. And the long-term goal is that you want to have policies in place and trainings conducted so that you raise the level of awareness and education, all to make the workplace a better place to be and, in my world, to prevent litigation. I think employers are often shocked to understand the cost of litigation. It's not just the lawyer costs, which admittedly are crazy. It is also the psychological cost, the emotional cost of going through litigation. It's time consuming. It never is what you think it's going to be. It always is lose-lose for everyone. And that's really what the point is.
Absolutely. And we're talking with Deborah Ford. She is the managing partner for Portsmouth, New Hampshire-based Jackson Lewis LLP. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter, and the law firm of Jackson Lewis. All we do is work. And again, we're talking today with Deborah Ford. She is an employment attorney with Jackson Lewis in New Hampshire. And we're talking about the jerk at work, which is a great topic because we all certainly have dealt with or certainly may have a jerk at work currently. So, Deb, we've kind of talked a little bit here about what it is, which I think everybody understands, and you know it when you see it, as I like to say.
You do.
We have the jerk at work. We've kind of talked about the legal part of it, which is, you're really not protected. It's not like harassment. We've kind of talked a little bit about how to identify it when it's a high performer or it's a manager. We've talked about the manager now getting that report in that this is happening. What I'd like to now talk about is, what does that HR professional, what does that manager do once they've got that information, and how do they deal with that situation effectively?
Sure. Let's back up a little bit and look at the hiring process. So let's first talk about keeping the jerk out of work, because that's really what the goal is. Southwest Airlines has a motto, hire for attitude, train for skill, which is a great motto to have. And I think the way that plays out is that you want to have a lot of people interview someone before bringing them into a job. It shouldn't just be the boss who was interviewing. It should be the coworkers, the subordinates to that applicant that is going to be managing those people, for example. And you want to have a whole range and a whole area of responsibility, different skill levels, interview someone for a job. And when you see that a particular applicant has those jerk at work qualities, difficult person, bully tendencies, don't hire that person. That's the first tip.
You're right. I mean, personality cannot be changed, but skill set can be.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's what a lot of companies are doing right now. It's different. It's difficult, Dave, to interview today because
sure
you can't
is.
Get references. Most employers will not give a reference because of the threat of litigation. I read a study recently that said that there only are about 3% of employers who do give a reference, even with an authorization. So it's very difficult to find out how someone did at a prior place of employment.
Well, I always say if you're going to put down a reference, rarely do you put down a reference to somebody that's going to say something bad about you.
Yeah,
it's just not going to happen.
Good point. Yeah, that's exactly right. So when you're interviewing, that means that you need to do a better job, I think, as an employer to ask better questions. I mean, for example, you want to ask open-ended questions. There are often so many questions where there are yes or no answers, or the boss is talking all the time, and the applicant says three words. Well, you're not going to find out anything about that person when you take an approach like that to hiring. And you and I have seen that over and over and over.
I'm smiling because I know exactly what you're saying, yes.
Yeah. So you really want to think more about the type of questions you want to ask. You want to make sure that they are open-ended questions so you get that person to talk. And you want to diversify the process. You know, get as many people to interview a person for a job as is possible. You're going to get a better end product that way.
No, I agree. I think, you know, if you can prevent hiring the wrong person in the first place, you've set yourself up so much better for success overall.
No question. No question about that. So the hiring, I think, is the first step that you're going to look at. And from there, then you would go to the evaluation process that we talked a little bit about. But this is a critical issue, I think, for employers to make sure that they properly evaluate. It's one of those issues that I find employers just get wrong all the time. Because you're busy, because who has time for an evaluation, because I'm watching the football game and I'll do my evaluation while I'm watching the Patriots win yesterday. And I'll take 3 minutes and do an evaluation instead of spending an hour to do an evaluation. And those evaluations, if not done well, come back to bite employers every single time. And that's an issue.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Performance appraisals don't have to be, you know, what I used to call your father's appraisal. They can be more timely. They can be not yearly. They can be half year. They can be quarter. They can be most relevant when they're done right away. I mean, we've certainly heard in the last year a lot of changes at Yahoo. You know, they're not using performance appraisals anymore. They're doing more immediate appraisals with employees. There are different ways of doing it to make it work for your organization, your company.
I think that's right. You know, we talk about training, but I think what managers have to understand is that if you don't properly document, it's very difficult to discharge an employee. And basically, you end up wearing that employee that you don't want to wear. But that all comes back on the manager. If you're not going to document, you're going to have to live with that employee. Because what happens is, you call me up, and you're an employer, and you say, I've got the jerk at work. And I have this, that, and the other thing. And I say, great, send me the personnel file. Let me take a look at the evaluations. And I get the evaluations. And everything is 3, meets expectations. On a scale of 1 to 5, 3 being average, it's average. And that's a problem. And you say to me, well, average in our company really isn't good. Well, good luck explaining that to a jury. You know, that's when I give the case to my partner because I don't want to do that case. Yeah. I know I'm going to lose that.
Yeah, no, I understand. And I think it's interesting. You know, one of the things we have seen is that a high performer, okay, so they excel in sales, they excel in operations, so they get really strong marks, maybe 4s, maybe even a 5 in those areas. And then maybe on the personality side, on those issues and concerns, they're starting to get 2s and issues. So when you average it, what happens? You get a 3. So this is a dilemma that sometimes comes out with those high performers that could be jerks. And one's balancing out the other on performance reviews. So it's about weighting it to what's important to the organization.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, I'm not a really big fan of weighting that final number because you're right. You may have 20 categories and you may weight that and the person may come out as a 3.1, let's say. But maybe they're very poor in 2 categories that are below 3. Well, maybe those 2 categories are more important to you than the overall score. And that's your right as the employer to decide which categories matter for the employment and which are not nearly as important. So you handcuff yourself as an employer when you do poor evaluations. And for me, I see this time in and time again in jerks at work. Either there aren't sufficient questions or analysis to deal with attitude and behavior. They're all based on skill and selling. And what product you're selling that day and how many the quotas, whether you met your quota or not. And they're not dealing enough with the attitude and the teamwork, which is important, critical, really, in the workforce. So I think employers, one, have to revamp evaluations to make sure that they are accurate and that they are broad. And 2, they need to be candid. The 3 means average. There's nothing wrong with a 3. So if you think someone is a 2, say that person is a 2.
So now you've had the employee, you've brought them in, you've hired them correctly, you're giving them good reviews. Are there policies or procedures that should be in place in terms of HR having a written policy that deals with these type of issues to now balance against?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are policies, anti-bully policies, that a lot of employers are enacting now. I was reading some study recently that said 56% of employers have now adopted anti-bullying policies. And that can be part of your anti-harassment policy, or it can be a separate policy. It really doesn't make a difference. The important point is to have a written policy, which should be part of your handbook, which needs to be disseminated to the employees, and which needs to have a mechanism for reporting bad behavior, reporting the bad worker, the jerk at work. And that can be to HR, it can be to a manager, but there needs to be some consistent procedure that is known to employees so they know what to do if they face that issue.
And known to managers especially, because now that something's been brought forward, if they don't have a standard process that they can follow, you know, somebody could feel like they're being targeted because there isn't a standard process across all levels of supervisors and managers and HR that they're going to follow.
That's right. Yeah, look, consistency is always the key in any employment issue that you and I deal with all the time. That's exactly right. One other thing that should be in the policy is retaliation is prohibited. I mean, that is something that should be in any type of anti-harassment policy, including the anti-bullying policy as well.
Okay. So we've said that we understand that this person is now dealing with it. The manager's got a procedure and policy in place that they're, you know, they know what they're supposed to be doing. Tell me about this, what you call the power of five, the managing people conflict in difficult areas. Five's a powerful number. Explain that.
So there are five tools that help you manage challenges of bad workers in the workplace, and they are communication, clarity, consistency, choice, and consequences.
The five C's.
The five C's, exactly, an easy way to remember. And so really all it comes down to telling the employee that they are not doing well, that they are causing difficulties in the workplace, and giving specific, clear, concise examples of when someone is being that jerk at work. That's really what the five C's come down to.
So when we're talking about communication, we're talking about making sure that you're not avoiding, right? Being very simple. What do you want to communicate? You know, what's important?
That's
would
right.
That be a good way of describing it?
Yes, it would. That's right.
Okay, so talk about clarify, because this is always a difficult area. You know, sometimes people have their feelings hurt when they have issues that come forward, and they're, you know, they're afraid to do that. So how does clarify help that?
I think most people have a very difficult time being candid, being direct, and HR managers, supervisors are no different than the rest of us. There's really not much worse than having that heart-to-heart with an employee and saying, this isn't working out. It's particularly difficult in this area because it's unlike an area where you're not making enough widgets. You know, the quota is for 10 widgets and you make 8 widgets. Well, that's a pretty easy conversation.
Very easy.
Yep. Here's the job description. 10 widgets. You made 8. You're not cutting it. That's easy. Everybody can understand that. But when we're dealing with a jerk at work, we're dealing with a softer issue. We're dealing with a subjective issue and a perception issue. And that's a lot more difficult and harder to get the message across because the jerk generally thinks, I'm not a jerk. You're the jerk, or you're really incompetent, or we're putting up with someone who shouldn't be here, and I'm just doing my job by reminding you constantly that you're inadequate. That's really the pushback you get in those terms. So delivering that message requires the HR person or the manager to be very specific. If you can't give specific examples, good luck with the jerk at work because they are never going to accept the problem.
No, you're absolutely right. We talked about consistency, obviously making sure that everybody is consistent in delivering and understanding their process. Choice. Choices are difficult sometimes for people to make. They don't know, should they say, should they not say. It could be a consequence. You talked a little bit about the importance of no retaliation. But the fact is people still do feel like sometimes that could happen. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I think for the choice piece of it, no one wants to be backed into a corner. So you need to give people options, and you need to give people examples, and you need to open other doors to deal with the issue. So what are the choices that are going to empower people to be able to deal with the jerk at work? And all of that is what you're looking at when you're talking about choice. I mean, for example, there's Abraham Lincoln had a leadership style that we look at a lot when we deal with the jerks at work. And that is that he took all people who didn't get along well, people who actually hated each other, into his cabinet on purpose to try to deal with dissension. And it was somewhat successful and somewhat unsuccessful. And that's something the employers could look at. You know, what do you do with that jerk? What's the choice? Do you bring them into the fold? Do you try to make them a leader so they're more invested in the workforce? Will that work? Sometimes it does, but sometimes it can backfire and make it even worse.
We're talking with Deborah Ford. She is an employment attorney at Jackson Lewis. We're talking about the power of five when it comes to the jerk at work. We've talked about communication, clarity, consistency, choice. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the consequences. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. I want to introduce you today to a new HR Power Hour sponsor. It's the AARP. They, of course, are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization with a membership of, yes, more than 37 million people. Here in Maine, there are over 230,000 members, and their office is located right here in Portland, Maine. Their work spans the entire state, and they are a trusted source for lifestyle tips, news, and educational information, AARP products, and certainly the AARP magazine. AARP is a great organization. They help people turn their goals and dreams into real possibilities. They strengthen communities and fight for the issues that matter most to families such as healthcare, employment security, and retirement planning. So I want to thank the AARP as a new member of the HR Power Hour sponsor family. So for more information about the AARP in Maine, go to www.aarp.org/ME. And we've been talking with Deborah Ford. And Deborah, thank you very much for being on the show as we head into the last segment. But we're talking about the consequences of the jerk at work. These are the top five things that we've been talking about: the communication, the clarity, the consistency, the choice, and now the consequences in dealing with a jerk at work. So tell me about the consequences.
So again, the most important point is for the employer to be consistent. So you want to reinforce good behavior, and that means that when you have that jerk at work who gets the message, maybe that's a pay raise, maybe that's a seat on the management committee, maybe that's some type of elevation to reward the good behavior. It's not all that much different than dealing with our kids. And conversely, the bad behavior, you need to do something. I mean, don't forget, for employers, you have employees looking up to you to do something when they make a complaint. And when you've got that jerk at work, if you do nothing, it can make the problem worse.
So I agree 100%. I think, you know, this is what we're talking about, is dealing with it the proper way, the correct way, bringing it forward, discussing it. You know, so when you're really looking at this overall issue, the jerk at work, what are some things that you say to yourself, these are key areas, these are key lessons for creating a jerk-free environment?
So there are a couple different points that are really the takeaways. So a few demeaning creeps can overwhelm the warm feelings generated by hordes of civilized people.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
That's a mouthful.
That's a mouthful.
What does that mean?
Say that again. That
I'm
was really
say
good.
That. I'm going to say it one more time, and I'm going to say what it really means. A few demeaning creeps can overwhelm the warm feelings generated by hordes of civilized people. Blah, blah, blah. Get rid of the jerks. Do something. That's really what the word is to the employer. Don't just put up with it. You've got the power. You need to take the power and deal with the issue. You need to follow up on the consequences. If you say to an employee, this behavior is unacceptable, then don't give the pay raise. One thing we hear a lot, for example, is, well, the average pay raise was 3%, but the jerk got 1.5%. So we sent a message. No, you really didn't. What you did was give a pay raise. Even though it's smaller than the average, it's still a pay raise. So it's not getting your message across, which is really what you need to do. You have to enforce the no-jerk rule. It's management's job. It's not generally appropriate to say to an employee, hey, we're not going to deal with this. You deal with this. Why don't you just tell that person to stop? Why don't you stand up and do something? Don't bother me with problems like this. Okay, that's completely unacceptable. So really, the overall theme is the employer needs to take responsibility, needs to take action, needs to communicate, and needs to be consistent.
You talk also about, should you keep a few jerks around, or should you keep, you know, maybe that absolutely critical key player? Where's the balance of between that two? Because let's say they're doing 50% of your sales.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good question. I started talking about Professor Sutton's book, and he has a whole chapter, which is really interesting, in keeping the jerk around. And he talks about Steve Jobs, who apparently had some issues in the workplace, let's say. And he had many, many employees who did not like him and thought that he was the jerk at work. Now, obviously, a brilliant man, a creative, inventive man who changed everyone's world, everyone. And here was someone who may have been difficult to get along with, but his skill set, his intelligence, his creativity was so great that, what are you going to do, terminate Steve Jobs? You're probably not going to do that. That's not realistic. So if you're going to keep the jerk at work for that type of reason, then isolate that jerk at work. What you don't want to do is have a lot of jerks at work. So one or two, okay, we can probably deal with that if we're all aware of it and we figure out effective ways to do it. But if you're going to have 10 to 20, you're probably going to have a pretty unsuccessful workplace.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, we've now kind of come to the end of the program, and I wanted you to kind of talk about the top steps that you think in enforcing the no-jerk rule at work that actually work.
There are a couple of things I think that work very well. First is what we talked about earlier, and that is don't hire other jerks. And that should be a key mantra for any employer. Figure out ways to ask better interview questions, spread out the interviewing to co-employees, to subordinates for that employee or that applicant, to make sure that you're getting a better sense of who the person is. And if that means bringing someone back in for a second interview, for a third interview, taking that person out for a drink or out for lunch or dinner, do it, because you get a much better sense of who that person is the more time you invest in the hiring process. So I do think that that works. Two, at least in my mind, I'm usually rather conservative in how I approach employment issues for the obvious reason of litigation. But in my mind, get rid of the jerks fast. If you've got someone with a personality issue who is difficult to deal with, who is the bully, it probably is not going to work out in the future. So I think it would behoove you to get rid of that jerk faster than letting that get into the workplace and foster all kinds of ill will with your employees. Again, it's a recruitment issue and a retention issue. So I think you have to look at that. I think third, employers have to manage. You've got to make sure that your managers and your supervisors know how to manage and supervise. Not everyone should be a manager or a supervisor. Time and again, we see really talented people who were not managers get promoted to be managers who are ineffective as managers. It's not for everyone. So you've got to know your employees well and understand when to promote and when not to promote, even though someone may be very talented. 4, training. Can't say enough about training. You have to do anti-bullying training, respect in the workplace training. For me, I do separate trainings with employees and separate trainings with managers and supervisors because the focal point is different. And it's really important to do that. And I know everybody is busy, but again, this is a long-term issue to prevent litigation, which is really what we want to do, and to promote a better workplace so that employees enjoy coming to work to the extent any of us can ever enjoy working.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the other topics you bring up is embrace the power performance paradox. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's true. You really need to take a look at the issue of your top performer, who is the jerk. And you have to do a cost-benefit analysis of whether that person is worth it to the workplace. Generally, the answer is no. And unless you're Steve Jobs, and we all know that's one in a billion, it's probably not going to be worth it for the employer to have that superstar employer spreading ill will in the workplace.
Well, Deb, it has been great having you on the show today and talking about the jerk at work.
My pleasure.
And I appreciate you coming on. And if somebody wants to reach you, they can reach you where?
They can reach me at the Jackson Lewis, Portsmouth, New Hampshire office. I'm licensed in Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. And we are in, my phone number is 603-559-2727. And you can reach me easily that way.
And certainly after this show, anybody can go to the HRPowerHour.com website. You'll find a taping of this show, which you can listen to if you missed a segment or want to go back and hear it. You'll also find the contact information for Deborah on the show. Again, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. It was fun.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Joanna Bowers from VeralDana. We all know that non-exempt hourly employees are required to accurately track their hours worked and that you should use their reported hours to ensure that they are paid properly. Many employers also require that their salaried exempt employees track their hours. Does your organization do this? If not, you may want to consider implementing this requirement for a few reasons. First, if an issue ever arises regarding whether the salaried employee should actually be classified as non-exempt, and you're required to pay the employee for past due overtime, you have an actual record of the number of hours, including overtime hours, that the employee worked. In the absence of this record, a court is able to rely on the employee's own testimony regarding the number of hours that they typically worked. Second, requiring salaried employees to track their time is helpful for managing employees' hours of work and benefits. For example, it helps you make sure that employees are accurately tracking their use of vacation and/or sick time. Third, tracking this time can help employers and supervisors better understand employees' workloads. If an employee is frequently working more hours than expected, it may suggest that another employee should be hired. Or, if there is a significant imbalance between the number of hours worked by two employees with similar responsibilities, it may suggest that there needs to be closer management of the employees' workloads to make sure that work is distributed more evenly. For more information about how to require exempt employees to track their time, contact me or another member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success. And stay tuned for Inside Portland with Bob Witkowski.